Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. We're here to entertain you, to inform you, and once in a while to amuse you. Today's program is going to begin by going into the past to tell you about something that is still important and growing. You say, "Why? I wonder what that could be." Well, two words: Morse code. Click here, and away we go. Reviving a 200-year-old system, Morse code enthusiasts are putting the digit back into digital communication. And for almost 20 years, a man by the name of Steve Galshut, a retired graphic designer, has trekked up the Colorado mountains, accompanied by his pack of goats, to contact strangers around the world. And he's using a language that is almost two centuries old, and many people have given it up for dead. But wait. On his climbs, Galshut and his herd have scared away a bear grazing on raspberries, escaped from fast-moving forest fires, camped in sub-freezing temperatures, and teetered across a rickety cable bridge over a swift-moving river, where one of his goats, Peanut by name, fell into the drink and then swam ashore, shook himself dry like a dog. And you are wondering, what is he talking about? He said it was going to be Morse code. It is about Morse code. Just be patient. He's in Colorado and sending Morse code from a mountaintop altitude offers ham radio's greater range. It's like being a clandestine spy and having your own secret language. Worldwide, Galshut is one of the fewer than 3 million amateur radio operators called hams who have government-issued licenses that allow them to transmit radio signals on specifically allocated frequencies. And while most hams have moved on to more advanced communication modes, like digital messages, a hardcore group is sticking with Morse code, a telecommunications language that dates back to the early 1800s, and one that offers a distinct pleasure and even relief to modern devotees. Strangely enough, while the number of ham operators is declining globally, it's growing in the United States, as is Morse code. And by all accounts, ARRL, that's capital ARRL, the acronym for the American Radio Relay League, is based in Newington, Connecticut, the largest membership association of amateur radio enthusiasts in the world. And it reports that a recent worldwide ham radio contest, wherein hams receive points based on how many conversations they complete over the airwaves within a tight time frame, show that Morse code and those who participate in it is up 10% in 2021 over the year before. The jump is remarkable, given that in the early 1990s, the Federal Communications Commission, which issues all U.S. hams their license, dropped its requirement that beginner operators be proficient in Morse code. It's also no longer regularly employed by the military and maritime users, who had at one time relied on Morse code as their main communications method since the very beginning of radio. Equipment sellers have noticed this trend too, and the majority of their sales of equipment has risen, according to a number of these people. Practitioners say that they're attracted by the simplicity of Morse code. It's dots and dashes, as you know. And it recalls a low-tech era when conversations moved more slowly. For hams, using Morse code transmissions, sometimes abbreviated as CW for continuous wave, offers a rare opportunity to accomplish communication tasks without high-tech help, like learning a foreign language instead of using a smartphone translator. A lot of people now look only to tools. They want to purchase their way out of a situation. Morse code, on the other hand, requires that you use the filter between your ears. A lot of people these days value that. Indeed, some hams say that sending and receiving Morse code builds up neural connections that may not have existed before, much in the way that math or music exercises do. A 2017 study led by researchers from Ruhr University in Bochum, Germany, and from the University from the University Center in Utrecht in the Netherlands supports the notion that studying Morse code in languages alike boosts your neuroplasticity in a similar way. Morse code emerged during a time of tinkering at the start of the electrical age. In the 1830s, Samuel F.B. Morse, who had made a national name for himself as a painter with talent, one who did portraits of luminaries such as John Adams and the Marquis de Lafayette, began working with colleagues, including the inventor Albert Vail. And they experimented with how an electrical impulse initiated in one place and transmitted over a distance through wires could activate an electromagnet somewhere else. Operators would push down on a button attached to a small slab of brass, and that slab of brass made an electrical connection between two wires. The connection sent electricity through these wires to a remote electromagnet, which then attracted a metal strip that made a striking sound. Morse's chief innovation here was the simplicity of his code. A short press made a short click or a dot, and a longer press, three times the length of a dot, made a dash. Various combinations form the 26 letters of the alphabet. And within a few years, the utility of Morse's new language became clear to governments and to businesses alike around the globe. Morse formalized the language as American Morse Code in 1838. And in 1851, countries standardized it into International Morse Code, which has remained largely unchanged since that time. The first intercontinental Morse message by radio in 1901 was a simple S from England to Newfoundland. Morse code then became the de facto method for critical telecommunications, and maintained that standing for nearly a century, despite the emergence of voice communication, because it offered clearer and more reliable communication for the military and for maritime users. That dominance broke in the mid-20th century, when digital data sent over satellites and fiber optic cables took hold. Most historians agree that the death knell for Morse came in 1999, when the global maritime distress and safety system, which generates an automated digital emergency signal for ships that are in danger, replaced Morse code's SOS, the familiar dot, 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 dash, 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 dot, dot, dot. Then military use disappeared, except in extremely rare instances. Other ship use became almost non-existent, and the last holdout users were ham operators who were still required to learn code for their licenses. Well, that changed in the early to mid 2000s, when most countries no longer required that hams be proficient in Morse. Although Morse remains the purview of ham operators, its presence still seeps into a wider culture. The new Apple Watch, for example, can silently buzz out the time in Morse when you put two fingers on its face. Since its opening, 1956, the Capitol Records building in Los Angeles, shaped like a stack of vinyl records, has sported a light on the roof, and the word Hollywood in Morse code. One of the main shortcomings of Morse code identified nowadays is its slow pace in an age of instant messaging. the average English speaker talks at about, 150 words per minute. While most experienced hams send and receive at only 12 to 25 words per minute. Although there are some ham operators who can work with up to 35 words per minute. Part of Morse code's enduring appeal for ham operators isn't going away soon. Its simplicity and easy detection on airwaves make it more reliable than voice communication and allow a ham operator to break through atmosphere noise and other weather conditions, even at extreme low transmitting power. When you can't get through with your own voice, Morse code gets you through. The next item on today's agenda is entitled Smithsonian, and that refers to the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C. People often write in to the Smithsonian with questions, and their experts provide the answers. For example, Dan Besko in Haymarket, Virginia, wanted to know, why are so many counties and cities in the original 13 colonies still named after British nobility? And he was told, it's hard to say for sure why specific places weren't renamed. But overall, the American Revolution brought limited change. And from the outset, many colonists opposed it or were indifferent. After the war, the U.S. began rebuilding economic and diplomatic ties with Britain. In contrast, French revolutionaries a few years later beheaded the king, the queen, and thousands more, and they abolished the feudal system. They adopted reforms for education, weights, and measures, with new names for everything. Some reforms, like new weeks and months, ultimately failed because people didn't get used to such radical transformations. But people living in the 13 colonies, free or enslaved, changed very little, and life went on as it was before. And then Marie Thomas, Spring Valley, California, wanted to know, if scientists search the great desert of Turkmenistan in Central Asia, have they searched there for dinosaurs? And the answer to her is the Karakoram, which covers 70% of Turkmenistan, would seem to be a good place to search for fossils, given their neighboring countries like Uzbekistan and Tajikistan have yielded major finds so far, but no major discoveries of dinosaur bones have come from Turkmenistan. But in the 1980s, scientists from the Academy of Sciences of Turkmenistan discovered spectacular tracks that were made by meat-eating dinosaurs from the late Jurassic period, which is about 160 to 140 some million years in the past. As is often the case with such finds, it is likely that local people know about the tracks without understanding their significance. Various tourist guides now promote the site as an attraction for the area, which is near the desert. I should probably point out that when I say Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan, the stan refers to the home of the Turkmen, or the Uzbeks, or the Tajiks. And our last question for the day, sent in from Niagara Falls, New York, asks, when astronauts travel to the moon, how do they pass through the Van Allen radiation belts unharmed? The answer provided was, the short answer is quickly. The longer answer is, NASA compiled extensive data from satellites on the distribution and the intensity of radiation in the Van Allen belts. These are regions starting about 400 miles above the Earth's surface and filled with highly charged particles from the sun. And they were closely monitored for solar flares that would increase radiation. Calculations were based on the protection afforded by spacecraft, their walls, and their spacesuits, convinced engineers that the total dosage during rapid transit through the belts would be well within tolerable limits, and the probability of adverse health effects would be acceptably low. And that is the end of our Q&A for this program and the Smithsonian. We're going to end today's program with some health news. You crossword puzzle fanatics, you'll be happy about this. Good news about crossword puzzles. Older adults with thinking and memory problems who did online crosswords regularly for 18 months saw their scores on a brain skills test rise. But while some played brain training video games, in addition to this, they saw their scores as a group decline slightly, according to a recent Columbia University study. And then another item you might smile about, the trippy mood buster. People who saw birds or heard bird song got a 53% boost in their emotional well-being in a recent United Kingdom study of almost 1,300 people. The study volunteers used an app to assess their happiness, their social connection, and confidence, as well as anxiety, stress, and low moods several times a day. And researchers found that being around birds boosted participants' positive feelings for at least several hours. So better go out there and get a bird in a cage, huh? Be happy for a little while. And then there's this last item, and it refers to the fact that we probably should be taking a flu shot along with our COVID booster, and that eventually and in the near future, we may very possibly have one shot which will be used for both of them. That we have to look forward to, and maybe in the near future. So, my friends, we're at the end of our program today. Hope you enjoyed the very long history of Morse code and the comments about that. I thought it sort of took me back to the days when I was a Boy Scout, which wasn't very long. You tune in to us next time, 101.5 on your dial. We give you information and entertainment, and we hope you smile at least once or twice today. It's time for me to tell you to be safe, be kind to others. Take care during the winter period here in Northern Illinois. The roads are slippery at times, and it's pretty cold today. So you'll be back with us next time. And next time we'll be talking about autism, the Earth's hot streak, and the restored ozone layer. Now it's time for Willie Nelson and I to head down the road. Hit the road again to find features for a little of this, a little of that. Bye-bye.